Hey, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 200th. Ta-da! The Trouble with Mary. My name's Sick Newman, let's circle back. Yeah, sticking with some contemporary music there. That was an air by John Jenkins, English guy. Wrote it around about the time we're in right now. Not that good, and he won't be particularly well remembered. Last week we got Mary kind of stitched up. Our legal inquiry didn't find her guilty or innocent, so she's just banged up in Betty's custody, making mischief with Tom Howard. But Tom's rebellion, or the rebellion of the Earls, went nowhere, and he's also in custody in the Tower. Betty and Catherine de' Medici seem to be playing the wedding games, and it suits them both to play that game. Spanish Phil sent some borrowed gold to support the Duke of Alva in Flanders, but our Betty has now got custody of the loot. Spanish Phil has retaliated against the English in the Lowlands, and Betty is giving him a bit of tit for tat by arresting the ambassador and some Spanish and Flemish citizens. I feel like I skipped over these things a bit, so let's have a bit of a closer squeeze. We have a big old international incident that seems to have gone down like this. William Hawkins, who is the brother of John Hawkins, has just got the news of that unprovoked Spanish attack on John Hawkins' fleet in Mexico. William Hawkins sent word on to London with a request that the government seize Spanish goods in retaliation. At the same time, that Spanish treasure ship sailed in looking for help, so William handily let the government know that the cash wasn't legally Phil's property. This was backed up by an Italian merchant in London, so the cash was seized. We've got a thin veil of legality, but it's provoked a crisis in our relations with Spain. Duke of Alva will help our position by rushing in to seize English property and humans in the Lowlands on the same day Betty was to receive the Spanish captain to hear his plea to get the money forwarded onto the Duke. Spaniards can now be accused of bad faith and acting as the aggressors. English now can take justifiable retaliation. It's all about the optics, my dear listener. Same back with Julius Caesar, who would poke and poke at people until they attacked him. Then he says, "Oh, I just had to defend myself." That's what he told the Senate time and again. It's why the USA bang on about their defence forces defending the citizens by going overseas and starting wars. So long as we're the good guys, then everyone's happy. Well, not the people we attack, of course. Spanish ambassador, who's in the slammer, won't help himself by writing two insulting letters while surely knowing the English would read them. In one of these, Betty is referred to Oriana, not Gloriana, but Oriana, a fictional queen of England, in a Spanish Arthurian type thing with buckets of blood spilled by the Spanish hero. Eventually, some guy will get 25 madrigals or songs written about Betty, referring to her as Oriana. How about we have a bit from the triumph of Oriana, hard by a crystal fountain. Off on a tangent pretty quickly there, but that was Oriana referring to Betty as being pretty glorious, whereas the Spanish ambassador is referring to her as Oriana in an insulting way. The English will be displeased with the ambassador's letter about our Betty being Oriana. Duke of Alva is a bit more cool-headed and will send a guy to find out Betty's intentions. He will score a frosty reception, be detained at Rochester, denied access to the Spanish ambassador, and no meeting Betty. He will eventually get to meet some counsellors headed up by Cecil. They've gone through the history books to find every bit of anything Spain has done to offend us, and do you have fool's authority to talk to us, mate? It's prevarication, while still slipping in enough words to say we don't want a war. Duke of Alva will report back to Phil saying he agrees with the English, war would be bad. Phil will think hard and also decide that yet another war for him really is a bad idea. Word back to the Spanish ambassador to do anything to support anyone who wants to depose Betty and to the Duke of Alba, do whatever he can to help Mary, Queen of Scots, become King of England, except invade or something stupid. Soon after, he'll firm up his message. Absolutely no war, and look, I don't really want to say the Mary, Queen of Scots thing anymore. I'm just over it. What's happened to our English policy of not upsetting people? Well, £85,000 of treasure is probably the best explanation. This was mostly Cecil's work. We can get cash while helping out the Flemish Protestants by denying cash to the Duke of Alba. Slowing down the Duke of Alba may also mean he can't come and build up England. It's going bad in Flanders, with Louis of Nassau getting done by the Spaniards and the Prince of Orange, his brother, has run away. From Cecil's point of view, the English have been getting away with it during Betty's reign due to Phil fucking about in Africa and the Huguenots giving Catherine de' Medici a hard time. But right now, Catholics Phil and Catherine both look like they're getting on top of things, and an attack on Protestant England seems pretty likely to Cecil. The opportunity then to disrupt Spain's war effort was sent from heaven. Thanks, Quill. There'll be a disruption to trade, but never underestimate business people who want to keep up trade despite the policies of their governments. You can disguise your imports and exports as being Scottish or Venetian, for example, and Cecil was already looking at moving the merchant adventurers away from Antwerp to Protestant Germany. Main thing is that war has been averted and we can enter into a nice, long series of talks. Overall, this has turned out to be a brilliant move for Betty. Around about now, we'll see a couple of pamphlets circling around, and I thought I might give you the main points. Here we go. The greatest danger we face right now is the Catholic League, France and Spain. The best defence would be Betty marrying a big, strong Protestant man. Failing that, Mary, Queen of Scots, must marry a big, strong English Protestant man. Mary's past is fake news. It was all James Stewart being a fucker. Can't deny she's a Catholic, but hey, Queen of a Protestant nation, and we all hope she sees the light soon and becomes Protestant too. But in any case, married to a Protestant Englishman means we could all live happily ever after. Except for those Puritan fuckers that will make the gospel their buckler to maintain their own imagined devices. Yet they're just as bad as Catholics and a threat to good order. Intolerant arseholes who will disagree with anyone, even over tiny little matters. I thought I'd toss that in to show the people see Mary as marrying an Englishman as a good idea that would give them security. Mary has married some duds, so let's help her by finding a good Englishman. Plus, we can see how at least one guy feels about those Puritans who are hanging around. As for the Catholics, well, it's been about 10 years since we banned the Mass, and some of those bishops are still banged up in various level slammers. Some nice, some not so nice. The big problem for them is that Big Papa Pope has nothing for English Catholics holding out for happier times. He's pretty silent on the matter of England. A lot of that was down to the total talk fest, the Council of Trent, so no setting policy while we're thinking about policy. But that's over now, and still we've got nothing. Nor is there any sort of senior Catholic churchy type at liberty in England. We do have English Catholic exiles in Europe petitioning the Pope to declare Mary to be Queen of England and send a bit of God's wrath our way. But the Pope won't be doing any of that without the support of Spanish Phil and the Emperor Sausage, and they're not really on Team Mary right now. For English Catholics then, it's been about 10 years of hanging around waiting until Mary Queen of Scots comes in. Is she the beacon of hope? Did God send her unto us to maketh us a Catholic nation once again? And so the monks shall spurt their holy seed into the mouths of... Oh, no, I shouldn't have given all that sort of stuff away. Yeah, I better give that away. We are full of action, my dear listener. All the stuff with Mary and Tom Howard and Northern nobles feeling rebellious is going on at the same time we're dealing with Spaniards and treasures, and as usual, it's all a bit of a clusterfuck. We've got three different things going on with Mary. Some Catholic nobles promoting out-and-out rebellion to make Catholic great again with Mary as queen. Some Protestant nobles supporting marriage to Tom Howard to kind of neutralise Mary as a force for Catholics. And Betty actually doing the right thing, negotiating with James Stewart to get Mary back to Scotland in a happy way. The Spanish and French are both adding pressure to Tom Howard to get married and then take Mary back to Scotland. Our plan goes like this. James Stewart to invite Mary back as Queen of the Scots. James Stewart would need to get a document to protect him from prosecution, with both England and France putting on pressure for him to take Mary back. Mary only to go back as the very happily newly wed Mrs. Tom Howard, the Protestant new King Consort of the Scots, and then we can all live happily ever after. Just one problem, we haven't got Betty to tick off on it. Maitland is to come to England to persuade Betty. James Stewart, of course, is not terribly happy with this, but he's copping pressure from Scotty nobles, who have been given the hard word by Tom Howard supporters. James Stewart's plan is to drag out negotiations with Betty while telling Team Howard that there will be no Mary comebacks unless she is fully married to Tom Howard first. Stalling will work, and by the time James Stewart calls the estates to discuss Mary's restoration, he'd got the numbers. The majority decide, not now, thanks, don't call us, we'll call you. Maitland will be arrested on suspicion of having murdered Darnley. Tom's wedding plans aren't looking that good. Also not looking that good is Cecil's future. That would be a shame, he's about the only guy in England who can see all the things going on, but may not have Betty fully appraised just yet. If I word that better, he can see all the things I've pointed out to you, my dear listener, but can he see the plot against himself? This goes back to that initial seizing of the Spanish treasure, which I presented as a united and decisive action by the English, but it wasn't united at all. Not all merchants can say, hey, if Spanish Phil closes one door, then I'll just find another one to open. So some merchants are complaining to the council. Give the Spaniards back their money or we'll suffer, they say. And they've got support from Tom Howard and the Earl of Arundel. Not because the merchants were right, but because Howard and Arundel wanted to stick it up Cecil. Spanish ambassador was so pissed off he went to the French ambassador saying, how about we team up to get rid of Cecil by having joint embargoes on any English goods? Frenchies will say, yeah, look, we're with him in spirit, but no, we're not fucking up trade. But before you know it, Howard and Arundel are chatting with the Spanish ambassador about regime change with Cecil and religion change with Betty approving the Catholic thing again in England. That's naughty. This thing seems to have traction with the cool-headed Frenchy ambassador writing to Catherine de Medici, saying, any day now, it'll happen. It's to be a bloodless coup with step one, Cecil must go. What's the problem with Cecil, you may wonder? Is it that he makes terrible policy? No, not at all. It's that he makes most of the policy, and that ain't fair. We others want a turn to make policy. Usual shit. Good time, though, with some merchants squealing about the loss of trade with Flanders. We're sticking it up the Catholics a bit by increasing fines for missing the Protestant magic show. It's not like we're setting fire to them, but they're getting stirred up and we're all a bit worried about the nicking of the Spanish gold. Is the government about to plunge us into a war? Plenty of reasons there for people to be stirred up. Worse for Cecil, that it seems Team Howard has Robert Dudley on side. They're keeping the religion bit quiet from Dudley. It's just, we need to bring down Cecil, and Dudley's with that because, like the others, he wants to make policy. We get a description of a council meeting from the Frenchy ambassador, so it may not be that reliable. In this, Betty complains that the council aren't making decisions on urgent matters. Dudley will say that ordinary types think the government is going terribly badly, that either England will go down the crapper or Cecil will lose his head for getting us into all this shit. Betty will get up Dudley and Tom Howard will say in a loud voice, see, if the Queen's favourite talks up Cecil, then Betty is all happy with him. But if he dares complain about Cecil, Betty wants to toss him in the slammer. Yeah, see, that doesn't sound like Tom Howard. Won't work, so Team Howard with Team Dudley will talk up an Aventine withdrawal. This is like the old Roman times when the big dicks withdrew, forcing their king to give in to their demands. Yeah, they won't actually do it. They'll just continue to talk about it and talk down Cecil, who will have to concede some power to them. Apart from bagging Cecil on foreign policy, though, they are still a minority in most things, these guys. It's worse because Robert Dudley won't support a plan to have Cecil arrested. Tom Howard is about to be distracted. His stepson, Lord Dacre, will die, leaving the question of inheritance. Tom Howard wants it, and dead Lord Dacre's uncle wants it. Cecil just happens to be the Lord of the Wards, so he'll help Tom Howard get that inheritance, and suddenly we're friended on Facebook again. The campaign against Cecil is over. Tom Howard can now focus on broaching his plan to marry Mary with Betty. He wants anyone but himself to do it. Dudley will be saying, yeah, look, today's not the right day, maybe next week, mate. Throckmorton will say, yeah, look, maybe next Tuesday. Cecil will just say, oh, yeah, tricky. Betty will get it through gossip at the hairdressers and start dropping hints to Tom Howard. Stuff like, be careful which pillow you lay your head on. Tom will say, hey, I've got no thoughts on Scotland. The whole place isn't worth as much as my English lands. And who'd want to run that big mob of Scotty nobles? They're a bunch of dicks. Dudley will say, I have a runny nose and I'm off to bed. Betty will come and see him and Dudley will go, boo hoo hoo, and blurt it all out about Tom's plans to marry Mary. And Betty definitely knows. Tom Howard will be off without permission. Naughty. He'll get a letter from Mary, Queen of Scots, who'll complain that because he's been fucking around, she's now in the hands of Henry Hastings, and that's going to make it pretty hard to get her out. Mary's guy, the Bishop of Ross, will be in to see Tom. The Bishop is hot property in England, so he's got to use the back door. He'll ask Tom, what if Betty recalls him? Tom will say, I've got tons of mates who would join me to sort Betty right out. The political temperature is rising. Betty, meantime, will send James Stewart to please explain, even though we know he's got nothing to explain. By now, James Stewart bloody well hates Mary and wants to keep Betty on side, so he'll tell her whatever he knows about the Tom Howard thing. That, of course, includes the plan to get a divorce from Bothwell, which has failed in Scotland. And really, Betty, all this is down to Mary. It's nothing to do with me. And we get new information. Part of the deal was that baby King Jim VI was to be betrothed to Kitty Girl of Tom Howard. It's looking like a total takeover deal. Tom Howard will be recalled. Mary will write to Tom saying, the time is now. Get your northern mates together and rise up in my name. Tom will get a headache. It's all tense in court and the ports will be closed. Betty will write a soothing type letter. It's all about, oh, I know you're loyal, Tom, and hey, that marriage with Mary won't be happening, but just come back so we can talk it through. See if there's anything I've missed in the idea. And we'll do it with the full council so we all know what the buzz is. Okay, my just and true servant. And hey, you know what gossip's like. That's why you find my guys all over the place, in your wardrobe, under your bed and so on. Now, Betty's letter crossed with Tom's. We'd said all the right stuff. I'm your true and loyal servant. Wouldn't do anything without your consent. Totally loyal. Just worried about being banged up in the slammer without justification. Betty will send a second letter that is way more direct. Get here now. Tom will get other letters from his mates. One saying, look out, mate. You're in for the chop. The other from Throckmorton, letting him know he shouldn't name names because, hey, you're on your own now, mate. Sir Henry Neville has been told to keep an eye on Tom Howard, and Tom will be ordered to surrender himself and send his hard men home. Off he goes to the Tower. Close confinement, thanks. The government is worried. Some of his mates are under house arrest at the court, and Throckmorton will be in the slammer too. Now, Francis Walsingham will have someone at his house in confinement, but more about Francis later. Robert Dudley will spill everything he knows and will be let off, so be back to Betty's favourite. The guys held at court will be allowed home on house arrest. But it's problematic. We can't put Tom Howard on trial because we don't have the goods on him. An acquittal would be a bad look for Betty and a good look for Tom. Cecil has a good idea. Get him married to some floozy, then he can't be looking at Mary Queen of Scots. It looks like that the big crisis has passed, and then those northern earls start their stupid rebellion, supported, of course, by uncle of the dead Lord Dacre, who'd missed out on his inheritance to Tom Howard. Tom Percy had already had a yarn with the Spanish ambassador, saying, Phil should marry Mary. Yeah, no, says the Spaniard. He's also had his man Norton trick his way in to meet Mary and see if he can spring her from the slammer. He can't. Leonard Dacre will go for a look-see, but he can't see any way either to get Mary out. He'll suggest to the Spanish ambassador that Phil send 15,000 hard men to the north of England to join up with the rebellious English nobles. Yeah, we've asked that before, you know. You're not getting them. The two earls revolting are Northumberland and Westmoreland. Percy and Neville, who seem to think it's a good time for Wars of the Roses Part 2. Neville is pretty useless, so wasn't getting much consideration at court, plus he's a firm Catholic. Same goes for Percy, really, plus his dad had been executed for his part in the Pilgrim of Grace rebellion, with the family left to hard times. And it was Mary who restored the Percy family. Percy may not be that strong a Catholic, though. You may recall the Pope sent cash to Mary to make Catholic great again in Scotland. The ship was wrecked, and it was this Tom Percy who got the cash. No sending it on to Scotland to help out the Catholic cause for Tom. No, he kept it. The two lads were called in by the Earl of Sussex, who gave them a good talking to and a stern warning about any sort of rebellion. But these guys were expecting Spanish troops from the Duke of Alva. Good luck with that, guys. Betty will call them in for a chat. Their plotting was already treason, so they decided to chance their luck with full-on rebellion. Nice job, that balladeer. The idea is that it is a holy war against the heretics, so holy banners and straight off to Durham to burn the Book of Common Prayer. Then they look at the piggy bank and say, oh, not enough cash to march all the way to London, so let's knock over a nearby castle. In comes the Earl of Sussex and Lord Hunsdon from York with lots of guys, so it's run all the way to Scotland, and the rebellion is over with zero casualties. Neville will eventually make his way to Flanders to live obscurely on pocket money from Spanish Phil. Percy will be sold out by a Scotty for a reward and have his head off in York. Silly boys. Not even the Catholics will claim them as martyrs for the cause. We all know they were in it for themselves. We can't link this with Tom Howard, so he'll be out of the slammer after promising he'd have nothing more to do with Mary. Shame they didn't find his letter to Tom Percy saying, hang off the rebellion or my head will be off. Betty will declare martial law in the north, and fair enough. Neville's and Percy's are still liked up there. A couple of guys will be attainted and lose their lands. Sir John Bowles will hang quite a few common types, as you do. He'll write to Cecil, whinging, saying there's nothing for him to do other than these hangings. It's all over, mate. Now, this was nothing like the Pilgrimage of Grace, which broke out in several areas, including the densely populated parts of the north. And the Pilgrimage of Grace was about all sorts of stuff, particularly hard times for common smelly types. The northerners like the old faith, but there's nobody really to lead them, not even a priest hanging around. And in politics, the old families like the Nevilles and Percys have shrunk. They're no longer big power players. The local gentry are okay, no particular need for them to get agitated, and the common smelly types are leading their normal shitty lives. Nothing much there to stir them up either. On top of it all, this is not Harry Hotspur or Richard Neville, the kingmaker, just a couple of dickheads, who, it would seem, had very pushy wives who wanted them to take action. Earl of Sussex, who Betty didn't particularly like, will get a job well done message. Betty, though, will have him in for some please explain questions first, which the Earl will answer well. Stuff like, you should have seen this coming, mate, and did you act fast enough? And Betty will be pleased with his answers. While the rebellion is over, it was led, as I've pointed out to you, by a couple of dickheads, but we still have that Leonard Dacre out there. Well, he's in London at the moment telling Betty how loyal he is. He'd been in fully, though, with Percy and Neville, but knew they were going off too soon. He's playing the long game. He'll be off home with a big bunch of hard men. Need them, he says, in case I see any rebels. Oh, okay. But he's actually off to take stuff from Tom Howard and start another rebellion. 3,000 hard men for Dacre, so in comes Lord Hunsdon again, but Dacre isn't running away. Not yet. He will in a minute or two. And we go, and it's noted that Dacre had plenty of women in his team. About 300 of his boys and girls will die, and Dapper is also off via Scotland to Flanders to live out his life in poverty. Now, that Lord Hunsdon, incidentally, is Henry Carey, son of Mary Boleyn, so cousin to Betty. She's been putting in lots of loyal guys in the north, and it's paid off. This time, Betty will issue a general pardon to everyone except Leonard Dapper, of course, and it'll be peace in the north. Kind of. It hasn't been all peace, love and lentils with Jane Stewart. Mary's supporters are giving them a hard time. James has gotten on top of things, but it's still tense. June 1569, we'll see him heading north to take some hostages sent by George Gordon, Earl of Huntly. It will actually go very well, with Jane Stewart having a policy of moderation. January 1570, we'll see him at Stirling Castle for talks with the English. They're looking for Neville Percy and Dacre. Now, James Stewart will be on his way back to Edinburgh, but on the 23rd of January 1570, one of Mary's supporters, James Hamilton, will shoot James Stewart in the back, killing him. First ever head of state assassinated by a gunshot. Well done, James. James Stewart was interred at St. Giles Cathedral in Edinburgh. John Knox had banned funeral orations, saying that they glorified the dead and showed up distinctions between the rich and the poor. So John Knox will, of course, break his own rule and deliver the funeral oration. Matthew Stewart, Earl of Lennox, father of Lord Darnley, and so granddad to King Baby Jim VI, will end up being the next regent. Good luck, mate. But for us in the north, it's back to border raids, so Betty will prove to the Earl of Sussex that he's a good boy by giving him more troops. Now, Betty had had a good boo-hoo-hoo at the news of James Stewart's death, and it seems she was generally fond of the guy. A deal had almost been finalised to get Mary back to Scotland in exchange for 6 Scotty hostages. See, dickhead assassin. If he hadn't killed James Stewart, it might have gone all very differently for Mary. Betty will set about supporting Lord Lennox for the regency gig. Tom Randolph will be off to Scotland to see what mischief he can make for Mary's supporters, while the Earl of Sussex will be let off the leash to go in with hard men to finish the job James Stewart had started. Earl of Sussex won't be thinking about moderation, so another example where an assassination has made things totally worse. Betty will do a deal with Mary. Betty will bring the English out of Scotland if Mary agrees not to call in the Frenchies. Deal done. Betty will now cool on the Lennox thing and ask the Scottish to hold off, which they do, making Lennox lieutenant instead of regent for now. Betty, though, can congratulate herself on how the nobility turned out in that Earl's Rebellion. Apart from the two Earls and the not even a knight, Dacre, it looks like we're all on Team Betty. Except there are still a couple of strong Catholic nobles hanging around. One of these will be the Earl of Southampton, Henry Risley, son of Tom Risley, who turned against our dear Tom Cromwell, along with Risley's father-in-law, Tony Brown, Viscount Montague, another Catholic. Tony had done well under Bloody Mary because he's pretty firm Catholic. Not so well under Betty because he's bagging her moderation policies and wants to make Catholic great again. These two, though, will run away once the Earls revolt. Off they go to Flanders, and in they come again. Wind was blowing the wrong way. Montague will go straight to court to declare his good boyness while the Earls are farting around, and will stay loyal when his brother-in-law, Lord Dacre, asks him for help. A couple of other guys to tidy up. One is Henry Fitzalan, Earl of Arundel, and Tom Howard's father-in-law. He's pretty old. Henry's daughter, Mary, who married Tom, died aged 17, but of course the family connection remains. He's still Tom Howard's father-in-law, even though his daughter's dead. He'd been sent away from court for being a dick. He's one of those guys who says the Fitzalans are very old nobility, so he should be more important than newcomers like Dudley and Cecil. Dudley actually got him back on the council when the nobles were looking to do over Cecil. He was one of those under court arrest for the rebellion, but no evidence, so he's back on the council again. The other guy who was involved, but Betty had no idea about just yet, is banker Roberto di Riolfo. He's a banker from Florence, based in England. So he's able to move around internationally and has been the messenger backwards and forwards to the Frenchies, the Duke of Alba, and Big Papa Pope. From his letters, we can see that the three Catholic big dicks, Phil, Catherine de Medici, and the Pope, just weren't getting along at all. And the guy who could have done the damage, the Duke of Alba, was writing to Phil saying, what I've been saying, the nobles involved in this English thing could not organise a bingo game for a bunch of old sheilas. Back to Mary, and James Stewart had written to Betty saying, look, the big problem for you and me both is Mary. She's the cause of your earls being revolting. Send her back to me. And it looks like that really would have happened, except, of course, James Stewart is about to be killed. The assassin's been captured and sentenced to death, but John Knox intervened. The assassin's lands will be forfeit and his missus turned out of her house. That will send her insane. Mary will write about how happy she is that James Stewart is dead and will later arrange for the assassin to get a pension. James Stewart was trying to get his birth legitimised, so it looks like he wanted to be the king. Mary will also write a nice letter to a kitty king, Jim Six, with a nice gift of a pony and gear for him, supplied by the Earl of Shrewsbury, Talbot. Betty won't allow the letter or the gift to go to the kitty king, and he can grow up being told his mum definitely killed his dad. Mary was back to the relative comfort in Chatsworth, but then her man, Bishop Leslie, will write a pamphlet in defence of Queen Mary's honour, and the Pope will chip in by excommunicating Betty with the instruction that English Catholics no longer have any need to obey her. Meanwhile, in Scotland, it was all trouble again, with Mary's supporters, in particular the old Lord Arran, wanting the regency. So Betty's compromise was Lennox, Darnley's dad, one of Mary's top enemies. Mary will be off to Sheffield Castle under the watchful eye of Sir Ralph Sadler. Now we can park Mary again and see what's been going on in France. Catherine's youngest daughter, Margot, is out of the royal kiddie department and in court. Bratty King Charles thinks she's marvellous, and Margot will be able to keep his temper tantrums under control. Meantime, her other brother, the teen leader of the army girly type, Duke of Anjou, will flatter Margot so that she will prevent Bratty King Charles from taking over the head of the army gig. Catherine seems to hate Margot for being the only kitty she's got that's healthy. Spanish ambassador will have a quiet word with Catherine, saying all your problems could be over if you just killed the top guys of the Huguenots, starting with Coligny. Yeah, she says, I should have killed them when I had them. And big rewards will be offered for the leaders, dead or alive, preferably dead, thanks. Of the three top leaders, one will die, with the other two getting seriously ill at the same time. Poison is the thinking. Catherine will now get her reputation as a poisoner and a practitioner of the dark arts. In comes a guy to make life-size voodoo dolls out of metal. Sure enough, two of those guys will die mysteriously too. Might be the voodoo, might be assassins, your pick as always. But Coligny always seems to be immune. Our voodoo practitioner says Coligny is protected by astrology and it will need 17 voodoo dolls to kill him. Meantime, there will be plenty of poison attempts on Coligny, but he's onto it and he will foil the plots.
Your cruel device, your blood like ice, one look could kill my pain.
Just a little bit of Alice Cooper and Poison. That's the go. The Huguenots will get German Protestant princes on their team, while the Royalists will continue to hire Swiss mercenaries financed by Spain. Royalists are led by dickheads to intercept the Protestant forces, but the Protestant forces all manage to join up. One of the Protestant leaders, though, is not as smart as Coligny. He'll get poisoned and die. Although when the dust settles, it might be that he just drank himself to death on that lovely Frenchy red. Catherine claims it was God showing which team he was on. Catherine will seize land owned by Huguenot nobles and have Coligny tried in absentia and sentenced to death, but he's a bit hard to capture or kill. Huguenots are going well and will besiege Poitiers, but our girly Duke of Anjou is learning on the job and will manage to lift the siege. 3rd of October 1569, it'll be a battle, with the royalists led by Tavannes, even though officially it's the Duke of Anjou, and they will win. 15,000 Protestants won't be going home, and Coligny will get a bullet to his face. It must be worse than an arrow to the face, because he had to leave the field. Coligny, though, still has his horses intact, so he'll set up a defensive perimeter around La Rochelle, the source of Huguenot sea power and their cash. Tavannes will say, let's just bypass his defences and take La Rochelle. Great idea, except bratty King Charles has turned up to take over and said, no, let's knock over the defences one by one. So we'll get bogged down trying to take those defences one by one until winter. And then we can't fight anymore. One of the De Guises will now infiltrate the Huguenots, but he has a top secret mission to assassinate Coligny. Won't work, but he will kill one of Coligny's top captains, then get away. Royalists won't be impressed with him. He just shot his old tutor in the back. No honour there. Bratty King Charles, though, will be impressed, so that assassin can score the Order of San Michel. The royalists are bogged down with the taking of Huguenot defences. They're broke and morale is in the dunny. Catherine can only open peace talks. It's shit with brothers King and Anjou squabbling all the time. Catherine will write to Spanish fools saying, please make my son the king know that peace talks right now is the way to go. Spanish Phil, of course, is appalled by the idea of peace with Protestants, so he's going to create obstacles for Catherine. Jeanne de Albret, Queen of Navarre, will be in the peace talks, but she knows that Catherine is a big fat liar. A peace made of snow this winter would melt in next summer's heat was not worth the bother. The Huguenots will again get the upper hand and start marching on Paris. Catherine's attempts at peace are going nowhere. Jeanne de Albret caught assassins going for her lad Henri of Navarre and her nephew Henri Condé, and Coligny, of course. Cardinal Charles will get the blame for this one. Spanish Phil can get married. That's nice. He'll marry the Emperor's daughter, Anne, who Catherine had wanted for bratty King Charles. The relationship with Spain remains in the dunny. Still, Catherine is hopeful that Margot will marry Don Sebastian of Portugal. Phil will stop that. Only one thing for it. Marry off Margot to Henri of Navarre. She's thinking this will be like the marriage of Henry Tudor, number 7, to young Betty of York, which kind of ended the Wars of the Roses. Henry of Navarre can then be in the succession list, so for Catherine, she still stands a big fat chance to have a grandson who will be king if her boys don't manage to knock out sons. Cardinal Charles won't like it. He wants Margot to marry a de Guise and get his niece, Mary Queen of Scots, married to bratty King Charles or girly Duke of Anjou. Either one's good for him. Of course, Mary is banged up in England, so his main focus is Margot and the de Guise lad. Margot is helping out by being hot for Henri of Guise, the new Duke. There's some nice love letters that Anjou will get hold of and tell bratty King Charles about them. Both boys are perhaps a bit too fond of Margot and might be a bit jealous. Charles will put on a hissy fit to Catherine, who will then rip it up Margot. Catherine and Charles will get physical with Margot. Yeah, she's going to cop a bit of a belting. Charles will send men with orders to kill Henri of Guise, but Henri will get wind of that and immediately announce his engagement to Catherine of Cleves. The De Guises will remove themselves from court, and with Cardinal Charles out of the way, Catherine can get back to her peace plans. Coligny will chip in, writing, I beg you, madam, to believe that you have no more devoted servant than I have been and have wanted to be. 8th of August 1570, we get the Treaty of Saint-Germain. Yeah, you get a bit of that cool jazz into your talks. That'll cool things down. It's pretty much the same as the last Treaty of Amboise that hadn't worked. Protestants can do the Protestant magic show outside towns and privately. Huguenot towns to be surety, lands and goods return with the usual both sides thinking they've got the rough end of the pineapple. War has caused the ruin of France, and the only reason we've got peace right now is because both sides are exhausted and broke. Nobody's won. For Catherine, it's just a matter that peace has brought time. Spanish Phil is totally cracked off with the peace deal. But at least he'll stop blocking the proposed marriage for Bratty King Charles and the Emperor's youngest daughter Elizabeth, as well as the marriage proposed for Margot and the King of Portugal. That should at least keep Catherine in the ultra-Catholic club. Of course, Protestants hate the idea. With the Portuguese thing, it won't matter. That particular kitty king had been brought up by his grandma and is totally timid and more interested in theology than anything else. He's protected by a couple of monks and usually just hides behind them and pretends he doesn't know you're there. No interest in marriage, thanks. Margot is busy flirting with the boys in court, and it seems she's flirting with the two brothers as well, the King and Anjou. She will later claim that she did in fact do the dirty deed with the brothers. But we might have a bride for Anjou. Cardinal de Châtillon, a senior Bourbon family member, had turned Protestant and run away to England. He's saying that Betty might marry Anjou. Yeah, the 37-year-old Protestant to the 19-year-old Catholic. That should work. Anjou will call Betty a bastard and a whore and a heretic to boot. No way, he says. She's an old creature with a dodgy leg. Betty, of course, is just using this to make Spanish Phil angry, which it does. Bratty King Charles would like nothing more than to see Anjou married and out of France in England. The back and forth with Betty will continue, with Catherine at one stage looking to swap Anjou for the younger son, 15-year-old pockmarked hunchback shorty Frankie, the Duke of Alencon. Betty will continue to play the game. Still, Bratty King Charles will marry Elizabeth of Austria, youngest girl of Max II, the Holy Roman Sausage. He's okay. As a Frenchy king, he's got a mistress. Catherine will be okay with that mistress. She's got no politics in her, that girl. Her kitty, Petite Charles, will go on to live a long and happy life as Duke of Angoulême, and he will live to see the reign of the glorious Louis XIV, the Sun King. You ain't going to have to live a while for that, mate. Catherine's thoughts will turn to marriage for Margot with Henri of Navarre again. Tricky. Back in England, Coligny's one remaining brother, Cardinal Odet, will be poisoned. Downer for him and no help to Catherine's plans for Margot and Henri of Navarre. Meanwhile, Bratty King Charles is looking to do a bit of ruling instead of his mum. He will come up with a foreign policy of attacking Spanish Phil in the Lowlands. What? He's going to help the Protestants against Spanish Phil? Is this boy on crack cocaine? Catherine, though, will see it as a chance to get the Huguenots out into the open and get that marriage with Margot and Henri of Navarre, so she'll encourage the talking stuff. Catherine knows that outright war with Spain would be a disaster, but a proxy war to support Flemish rebels is a risk that might be worth taking. In comes Cosimo de' Medici, hated by the Emperor Max and Spanish Phil, because the Pope had declared the Duke of Florence would also be the Duke of Tuscany. Catherine hates this guy because, you might remember, he's a distant relative of our magnificent Lorenzo de' Medici and his family, so for her, he's just some upstart from the country. But he wouldn't mind taking on the Spanish in Flanders, so happy to talk it up with Bratty King Charles. Catherine can just watch the Bratty King fuck up the diplomatic talks. Cosimo can see that Charles is a dickhead, so he will encourage Charles to get Catherine's advice. No point going to war if your allies are thick as a brick. Charles will open talks with Louis of Nassau, who's brother to the Prince of Orange, the guy looking to liberate the lowlands for the Protestants. Louis of Nassau had been forced to run away and was with Coligny and the Protestants in La Rochelle. Secret meetings will be held with Louis and Charles, working out who will get what in the liberation of the lowlands, with Louis pointing out to Charles that he'll be hailed as a mighty hero, and that's just what Charles wants to hear. Spanish ambassador will complain that if you keep going down this path, then it will be war with Spain. We won't be bullied into anything against the best interests of France, is the reply. Well, that sounds very modern, doesn't it? The plan, though, will work, so Coligny will turn up for talks and get lots of lovely presents. Cosimo de Medici, though, will say, yeah, I've changed my mind. I'm off for some Turk belting with Emperor Sausage and Spanish Phil, so they'll like me on Facebook again. And these guys will have a mighty naval victory over the Turks, with Catherine sending out a well-done mate to Spanish Phil. The Frenchies are all cheering on this mighty victory against the infidels when someone remembers that we'd lent the Turks a lot of Frenchy ships that have just been destroyed. Oh, bummer. Shipbuilding will be stepped up. Catherine is okay. She thinks the defection of Cosimo de Medici means we won't actually go to war in Flanders. Yeah, we just want to talk about it to get the Huguenots to talk to us. Brady Charles didn't get that memo and is full steam ahead. Tensions ramp up. Spanish ambassador will be very nervous when he's accused of writing that two of Catherine's kiddies are bastards of Cardinal Chatillon while she was simultaneously banging Cardinal Charles. The ambassador, disguised apparently as a parrot, will run away to the Netherlands and safety. Now, I kid you not, the history says he was disguised as a parrot. The Frenchy court will all have a good laugh about that. Now, Charles is getting along splendidly well with Coligny. It's an echo of his dad Henri and Coligny's uncle Montmorency. Charles will even order the cross of Gastines at St. Denis to be dismantled. Now, that was part of the peace deal. Any reminders of the religious wars to go. And the mob will be very annoyed about the dismantling of that cross. Courtiers follow what the king does, and with the De Guises out of court, we're all very courteous to Coligny. But the mob ain't having it. Catherine will pressure Jeanne, Queen of Navarre, over the marriage of Henry and Margot. Now, Catherine's got leverage here. She could get the Pope to declare Henri a bastard because he's the son of Jeanne's second husband, and that marriage was a bit dodgy. And if that were to happen, then the bear would become fair game. On the other hand, if he marries Margot, then he's in the succession to France. Jeanne will capitulate, and it's to be a top-secret meeting in a top-secret secure location. Now, back in England, it's time to talk about the Northern Rebellion. We want to know what happened in detail, particularly any foreign interference, and particularly Spain. And they aren't sure they've uncovered everything in England yet. Does Norfolk have more guys out there working against Betty? If we can dig up any dirt, then Tom Howard won't have to be set free. And it's all turned to shit in Scotland after the assassination, and there's rebellious English nobles up there right now. Will these blokes be back with the Scotty army? We'd better invade Scotland first, so off goes Sussex for a bit of border belting. The Frenchies are in a bit of a lull with that treaty, so they'll demand Betty remove the English troops or face a Frenchy army landing in Scotland. It's just Brady Charles making noise, but we've got to take him seriously. Betty, though, is worried because she thinks a Frenchy invasion would mean Spanish Phil also sending troops. She doesn't know that Phil hates Catherine de Medici. Sussex will be ordered to stop the heading of people and start some chatting with the remains of James Stuart's party, just hinting that they can expect English support. Betty is not into wasting money, otherwise she would now spend up on Scotty nobles to get an English-supporting government. Yeah, bribery's still the go. Sussex will exceed his authority level by marching with James Stuart's guys on Edinburgh. The opposition are held up in Linlithgow and will run away. Darley Sad Lennox, representing himself as baby King Jim VI's top team member, is with Sussex, so they will set a nice fire to Hamilton Palace, home to old Lord Arran, and they'll fuck over his garden good and proper. Sussex and Lennox were about to go to Dumbarton, which is where any foreign force would land when Betty gets a message to Sussex, "Back in your box, buddy. Your actions might mean war with France." Betty will write to Brady King Charles saying, "I will get my forces out of Scotland and open up negotiations with Mary if you don't invade." Charles will reply by email to make it super quick. "Great timing, Betty. I've just ordered my invading army in Brittany to stand down." Yeah, bullshit, I reckon. Scotty Lords will agree to a truce with both sides being whingy, but Mary thinks things might be looking up for her. Scotty Nobles will come together in a rather tense meeting which sees Lennox made regent. Team Mary will refuse to acknowledge him, so our English are back in trying to get the lads to all agree. But at least we've got some sort of Scotty government operating again. English rebellious lords, staying with George Gordon, Earl of Huntly, will start slipping off to Flanders. It's an uneasy peace in Scotland while we're waiting to see what bratty Charles will do with Mary. Like the Scottish, the English council are divided. One lot like Tom Howard and Mary, with others wanting punishment for Catholics and support for the Huguenots. August 1570, and things have cooled down enough for Tom Howard to come out of the slammer to house arrest. There had been another attempt at rising in the north. Businessmen wanted filthy foreigners out, Flemish exiled weavers in this case. But the locals thought this is bullshit, just the rich wanting to get richer. Maybe they were smarter than us. So the merchants tried the evil advisors thingy and asked the Duke of Alba to help out. He's still not interested. But they weren't calling for Tom Howard's release or use his name, so all good for Tom. It's not happy times for Betty, with different factions urging her to do different things and all saying it'll go to hell if you don't do what I say. Spanish Phil has been kept busy with a revolt by a mob called the Alpujuras. They're 3 years of busy for him. Now, these Alpujura guys live in a remote mountainous area of Spain and are kind of Catholic descendants of Muslims who told Ferdinand and Isabella they'd convert rather than leave Spain. The local archbishop had decided they weren't Christian enough, so Phil had issued orders that they had to do stuff like learn Spanish. There were surprise inspections to check for copies of the Quran and make sure that they weren't doing the Muslim magic stuff and so on. So they rebelled. They'll look for other Muslims to join them, but those guys will say, "Oh no, thanks." So the rebels will go full religious fanatic. It will be protracted, mainly guerrilla-type warfare, but once Phil wins, it will be expel heaps of them, rebel or not, so lots of people will die on forced marches. Phil will then distribute their lands to willing Spaniards who come in and find out that life is pretty shit in this remote mountainous area. Another shitty bit of history and not a good look for the Catholics. So Phil's put down that revolt to get peace in Spain, and the Huguenots have signed a treaty with Catherine de' Medici to get peace in France, so it's time for the English to worry again. Then in comes that excommunication, and we can see a build-up of ships at Flanders. We're definitely worried. This is actually a fleet to escort the brand new Queen of Spain to Phil, but we think it's an invasion. But he's looking to compromise. Dudley, having abandoned Tom Howard and Mary, has just recently changed again and is championing them again against Cecil. Dudley thinks Mary should be restored to Scotland under strict conditions, and the verbal war with Cecil is heating up. Then Mary could slip into Protestant England when Betty goes to a heavenly reward. On that basis, he needs to support her now. He thinks Betty will surely name the Seymour guy, Earl of Hertford, as successor, and the Dudleys and the Seymours don't play well together. Dudley can also see that Catherine de' Medici and Spanish Phil don't play well together, so his policy is to ally with France as insurance against Spain. Mary could be handy there. Why he's back to supporting Tom Howard is a bit more difficult. Tom Howard is the last Duke standing in England. The only one, but his political influence right now is pretty much zero. But maybe it's that in the future with Queen Mary too, Tom Howard would be back to a big swinging dick. We just don't know why Dudley's doing this. Dudley will even become friends with the old Earl of Arundel, which also seems a bit weird. Arundel has been a bit of a lone wolf, supporting the Catholics wherever he can, and he's up for anything extreme. Cecil is on his Pat Malone with views that Mary would make a grab for both silly hats, Scotty and English, with the help of European hard men. If that happens, we'd be relying on the English Catholics to put nationalism ahead of religion. It's possible, but you wouldn't want to make a bet on it. Sir Ralph Sadler, though, will support Cecil's view, saying, look, those Scotty nobles just keep neutralising Scotland by building each other up. Nobody there seriously wants Mary back. They just use her name to rally people. Keep her in the slammer, and as for Europeans, they're all over the shop, so there's plenty of opportunity to make alliances along the way with this one or that one, whatever suits us at the time. Well done, Sir Ralph. I think you've spotted it there. Betty, of course, is just focused on avoiding stupid foreign wars, even the unofficial stuff like Sussex in Scotland. He's just there as a peacekeeping force, officially. This has cost Betty the trip to Scotland, and she's had to look for lenders. Spanish ambassador wrote to Phil saying Betty is too afraid to call Parliament because they would force the succession thingy on her. Name that heir. He's also bullish on Mary. Betty has sent her some shit conditions, he says, and Mary's ticked off on them. So Betty has no reason left to keep her in the slammer. Same as Tom Howard. Betty just ran out of reasons to keep him banged up. For Betty, then, it's let's find a reason to keep Mary banged up in the slammer, and Betty will have a whole week to do that, because, once again, we're out of time. Hingham there playing some Delta Blues. You usually find him hanging out with Imelda May. And this week it's about a movie called The Devils, which came out in 1971 when I saw it. And I've been meaning to read the book ever since. So it's about 50 years I've been meaning to read the book. But I thought I'd better rewatch the film first. Back in 1971, we came out of the movie theatre totally shocked by this thing. So, of course, first thing I'm wondering is, will I be totally shocked again? And the answer, obviously, is no. Compared to movies like Saw and so on, this is very tame. Although if you're religious and particularly Catholic, then I can see where this would be very disturbing still. The Devils was made by a filmmaker called Ken Russell, who was into vivid imagery in his movies, and in this one he was into shock. The thing had trouble getting released because it was so controversial. Got banned in quite a few places. Couldn't see it in Finland till 2001. Won some awards, places like Venice, even though it was banned there. So, what's it about? Well, the movie focuses on a guy, Urban Grandier, who was a priest back in the 17th century in France. And it's about the judicial murder of this priest. Murder in a very nasty way. He's going to be tortured and burned alive. But the deal is, there was this bunch of nuns close by, led by Sister Jean of the Angels. And these women acted up like they were possessed by demons, probably just to get attention. And they, of course, accused Urban Grandier of being the puppet master behind all the devils that were inhabiting them. We then bring in the exorcists, and of course these guys are fucking batshit crazy, and the whole thing gets right out of hand. So the thing stars Oliver Reed as sexy priest, and Vanessa Redgrave as the deformed Sister Jean of the Angels. It's very nasty and graphic, and has some imagery of baby Jesus that people might find a bit disturbing. Now, the events that depicts actually did happen, and next week we'll have a look at the book that inspired the movie, because it's got, of course, way more detail in it. I think the movie stood up pretty well to the test of time. I can't see anybody remaking it any time soon because Ken Russell pretty much nailed it. The Devils. But for us, it's just a matter of what we go out with. I think we should go out with a little bit of the Black Lips in their song Veni, Vidi, Vici. Of course, that's the famous quote from Julius Caesar, "I came, I saw, I conquered." Hope to see you next week. Bye.